Manufacturing has certainly continued to power the growth of the Chinese economy in the last few years. The journalist and writer Martin Jacks has been watching China very keenly over that period because he has a personal stake in that growth. His book, When China Rules the World, was published in late 2008, and he faced a lot of criticism from those who warned that the miracle was about to evaporate. It certainly hasn't, and Mr. Jacks has just published an expanded version of his book. One of his big themes is what he calls the decline of the West. I wanted to know if he really thinks the West was in absolute decline or just declining relative to China.
Of course, what we're talking about is relative decline. But also it's important to note that we're now, what, 3.5 years after the financial crisis? And there are a fair number of economies in the West that are significantly smaller still than they were before that crisis hit. The American economy is probably more or less the same size, but a lot of European economies are still smaller, including our own.
But, you know, I mean, there are questions about whether China can really sustain this. I mean, you see these asset bubbles growing in China. The classic is, of course, the Beijing property market, but actually it's an asset bubble that stretches all along the east coast of China. Can China survive, presumably, what will happen, the bursting of these bubbles?
If you take the bubble example, because you're absolutely right, it's not just the property bubble. They've had to deal with various bubbles over the recent period. And they've been so much better at handling their bubbles than we have. We had our property bubble in America, the subprime and all that kind of thing. And what happened? When it finally burst, it brought the economy down with it. And the banking sector, which then required an enormous public loan in order to overcome. Now, the Chinese, if you look about what's happening to the property prices, then the Chinese authorities have managed a soft landing. They pricked the bubble in good time.
They haven't pricked it yet. I mean, it may it's arguably
in the process. It's in the process of being sorted. It's not going to result in a banking crisis.
I want to question whether you're right that the success of the Chinese economy is down to economic management. Because the other way of looking at it is that China had this vast unused capacity in the form of hundreds of millions of people, rural labourers, who just itching to do business, to come in and work and earn higher salaries. And what China did was begin the process of releasing that capacity. And actually, all they needed to do was open the floodgates, and there was this huge potential there just waiting to be released. The problem comes now when, you know, there are pinch points in the economy, and now is the time where we see whether or not they're good economic managers or not. Do you think that's fair?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that just because the potential and the possibility exists doesn't mean it's realised. Because if it was so simple, then at the time of the British Industrial Revolution, everyone throughout the world would have been doing it. I'm sorry, it's not as simple as that. So if you're looking at the developing world now, for example, of course these transformations are beginning to take place in more and more countries, which is magnificent. But the Chinese example is the most remarkable. And continues.
Is it, or is China just the biggest country demographically in the world?
No, we've not seen a country growing at this growth rate for over 30 years. British Industrial Revolution growth rate from 1790 to about 1830, the high period of Industrial Revolution, was between 1 and 2% at most. The American growth rate between the end of the Civil War in the 1860s to 1914 was a bit over 3%. The Chinese have been doing it at 10%. Now, the thing is that you don't just throw a lever or throw a switch. This requires extraordinarily good economic management, and the Chinese have delivered.
You see, I'm not sure that I can agree with you on that, but let's move on because...
Why are Westerners so reluctant to express a respect and humility for the Chinese achievement? I don't understand this. This is based on some deep cultural hubris that Westerners have, that they know best and they sort of
mark everyone else. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you look back at the history of industrializations elsewhere and you don't see, there is not a great deal of state economic management. These are processes that have their own
momentum. I think, no, this is...
So you look at what happened in Britain.
I'm sorry.
That was not controlled by the British state. No one had ever done it before. It happened as a spontaneous process. The same is true of America.
Well, historically, you're just wrong. It was true of Britain. It was not true of Germany. It was not true of France. It was not true of subsequent industrializations, except for the American one. The two great exceptions, broadly speaking, were Britain and America. No one else.
The two I picked.
If you look, yeah, because this is an Anglo-Saxon mentality, which is still resides in our culture in the sense that the state is, you know, a certain hostility towards the state. Take all the East Asian transformations, the, you know, so-called Asian tigers. Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, South Korea, Indonesia, Malaysia, all of them have had in various ways a hyperactive state. And one of the reasons why they succeeded, and for example, for a long time, Latin America didn't succeed, was because of this. And they developed their own model, their own way of doing things, which has been far more effective than the Western medicine, which was the Washington Consensus, which was privatization and a diminishing role for the state.
Let me put to you another Western judgment about China, which is that now it faces a transition period. Labor costs are going up. There's labor inflation in China. That's something actually quite deliberate by the Chinese economy. It's part of their rebalancing. But it begs the question whether China can become a higher value manufacturer. And part of that is about whether or not China can genuinely come up with new innovations, whether it can come up with a new product which will find a world market. Do you think China can?
Well, I'd say two things. First of all, there is still a lot of potential in the old growth as well. The second point is, can they shift? I think they will. On the one hand, you'll still get in lots of provinces what we've been used to, which is this pretty basic kind of production en masse for export markets and so on. And on the other hand, you're going to get many Chinese companies rapidly rising up the value-added chain. Indeed, also, you know, you've got international firms settling there, doing their basic production, and then steadily what's been happening is their research functions and marketing functions have been gravitating towards China as well, because they need to be close to where the action is.
Now, one thing I've got to put to you is one of the other drivers of the Western belief that China won't be able to continue to grow, and that is demographics. The classic line is that China will be the first country to grow old before it grows rich. Now, do you buy into that?
Around now, the Chinese population is going to peak and the labour force is starting to age. China's big economic and political problem has been, can they generate enough jobs? The fact that the labour force will not be so plentiful will mean the costs of labour will rise, and that process has already started. And that will make labour expensive. It will require firms to go up the value chain. One of the critical factors, short, medium term, will be the one-child policy. They could make this policy much more flexible or even stop it.
Now, one last question. We can't not ask you about Bo Xilai. Now, it's presented as if this is a political crisis for the Chinese leadership. And I wonder whether it is. Or are they not just weeding out a man who was both politically and in terms of his business activities a problem for the leadership? It's not a schism that we're seeing, or is it?
Bo Xilai was quite a kind of adventurer, an individualist who had an incredible sense of his own entitlement because his father was an associate of Mao, and hugely ambitious. Bo Xilai has gone, it would appear. The ructions in Chinese society consequent upon it have been relatively small, and the path for the transition to the new leadership, with a new president, new prime minister, will be a relatively smooth process, and Bo Xilai will be forgotten.
Martin Jakes, the combative author of When China Rules the World.